technology is the most powerful change in the world of education.
Everything changes.
Welcome to the Emerging Technologies in Education podcast, delivered to you by Clever Books Company. Dear listeners, thank you very much for joining the Emerging Technologies in Education podcast series. And today we have the guests, Connell. Hi, Connell. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you. So I want to give Connell the way to introduce himself and tell which country he's coming from, what he's doing in life, and anything he wants to tell about himself.
Sure. Thank you very much. So my name is Connell Ryan. I'm based in the Boston area here in the U.S., and I have my own business helping publishers and technology companies develop and execute their ed tech product strategies. Often this requires forging partnerships of one sort or another around content and technology, pedagogy, figuring out target markets and so on, and go-to-market strategies and so on. So my background is I've been an executive at big publishing companies like Houghton Mifflin, and more recently CEO at technology providers like Muzzy Lane. So I've worked on a wide variety of products for both the K-12 higher ed and global consumer markets.
This is interesting. So you have the background in technology, in strategy, in publishing, and it is connected to education, correct?
Yes.
That's brilliant. Okay, so traditionally I will ask you the question, how do you feel about using technology for the educational purposes? Like no matter what, in the classroom or it's in the home environment, how do you feel about, like, are you positive or negative about that and why?
I'm generally very positive. I've been at this a while in education, but I'd say we're still in the early stages of this with lots of exciting developments to come. I started out actually in business software before my two oldest daughters started leading me toward educational software. And I tend to compare everything to my early software experience. And I think great technology does a couple things really, really well. One is friction removal, which is it takes and automates drudgery and makes your life easier. And the second thing is, it opens up creative thinking and gives you tools that help you think better, to consider possibilities without constraints. So you know, spreadsheets did that by automating a task that used to be done manually and eliminating the need to enter thousands of numbers by hand, which was an arduous and error-prone job. The creative part was that the what if you could you no longer had to be a financial wizard or an accountant to test assumptions. All you had to do is say, what if I sold 1,000 more units, or what if I cut my cost of goods by X percent? And you could instantly get an answer. Plus, there was a sneaky third benefit, which is spreadsheets taught people how to program in 2D through rows and columns and cells and formulas without knowing you were even learning a programming language. So I sort of look at the continuum of things that have led to educational software and all the exciting things that are going on now in terms of personalized learning, adaptive. And I feel like they're all part of the same general goal, that you've got to remove friction, make people's lives easier, give them back time in their day rather than presume to take more of it. And then you need to give the augmentation is not just the technology you provide through the device they already own, but the way you free them up to think differently and more creatively and more powerfully about problems they want to solve and concepts they want to teach.
The interesting point you just mentioned that, well, that could be a positive about technology, but you say that we have a long way to go. And do you think, like, why is that? Is that because some people might be rejecting using it? Some might people could be saying, like, oh, that's outside of my comfort zone. I don't really like it. Or what would be your opinion? Like, why is it slowly moving, kind of the progress of implementing something like innovative and technological in the educational process?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I mean, in terms of just the pragmatic reasons in a classroom or institution for learning, but I guess to some extent this would translate to the home as well. I thought more about it in advance of our discussion as it related to schools. But a few of the reasons to tick off are they can't afford it. Maybe they do want something, but the school doesn't have the infrastructure of hardware, software, and network capabilities to support the thing that they're excited about. Maybe they think they want it, but they can't figure out how to use it. That's a very common technology faux pas, which is you really are solving a problem. You really are addressing a pain point, but you're doing it in a kludgy way, and mere mortals have difficulty using your tool, and they'll quickly reject it. Just like on the internet, you've got 2 to 4 seconds to hook someone to actually continue reading before they go on to the next link. And teachers sometimes have figured out how to use something, but don't think it delivers any benefit once they've given it a chance to themselves or to their students. But to me, the number one consideration is always time. Teachers have so little of that. So if the technology is asking them to devote more time to anything, chances are for its success are slender, I think. So it's a long list. We could talk about that in great depth. But I think, you know, I don't think the age of the user has much to do at all with whether there's a willingness to experiment with technology. It's more of what problem does it really solve? Does it do it well? Can I afford it? And can I use it easily?
Interesting.
And do I, someone I trust, does someone I know and trust recommend it to me? I mean, discoverability of things is so tricky now that you want the validation from people you know and trust to say, you know, that Clever Books thing, that's really cool. My kid used it and saw the rocket take off or the geometric form, you know, emerge immediately in 3 and 4D. And she was delighted by that. That was an aha moment for her that wouldn't have happened without that experience.
That's really interesting. So recommendation could be one of the cases. And like, okay, and if talking like generally about technology, like 3D printing and AR, VR, or maybe like e-libraries or something like online learning, what do you think would be the most beneficial for the school use and why?
Well, I have my biases like everyone else. And for the most part, they're unimportant. I'm a huge advocate of game-based learning and game-based assessment. And I think, you know, simulations, learning by doing generally is something that needs to infiltrate and inform the whole soup to nuts education process more thoroughly and creatively than it has so far. And, you know, we need to teach kids how to creatively problem solve, collaborate, and adapt. So those are some of the areas and things like AR, VR, 3D printing, where you're in a maker environment, and new programming tools that are visual, just turbocharge that general concept of learning by doing and iterating through multiple failure, not looking at it as failure, but just sort of steps toward ultimate knowledge and ability to work through a problem and get to an answer when there's no one right answer. I do think that if I spoke as a teacher rather than for myself, I'd say that what really matters is not the technology at all, but that what you give me is something I can use, something my colleagues can get behind and use, and ultimately something that my students will benefit from using. And I think there's some table stakes around that that are pretty important. One is that, you know, for K-12, that your solution is standards-based and it's research-based. Someone has actually looked, if not longitudinally, at least anecdotally, and got some information that outcomes change based on the application of that technology. It's got to be drop-dead easy to use. And it's got to provide excellent data, but it's also got to have ironclad privacy. I don't want my kids' personal information going out on the internet. And then, you know, will other teachers get it, approve of it, and use it so I won't feel embarrassed by the decision I made? In higher ed, it's got to be affordable, because student affordability is perhaps one of the number one issues right now. It's got to work on any device, and it has to be accessible so that even if I have a disability, if I'm sight impaired or hearing impaired, I can still get a great learning experience. And it's got to play nicely with other stuff I already have. So if it breaks something else that I depend on as part of my learning, then I'm going to reject it pretty quickly.
That's interesting. So you find it like using just device on which the app is installed that doesn't actually capture or share any personal data would be more secure rather than something like e-library where you need to register and so on, right?
Yeah, I think the privacy thing is very tricky, and it's been a big issue here in the U.S., both in higher ed and in K through 12. So it doesn't, I wouldn't limit it to any particular genre of app or area of technology. I would say, generally speaking, you just need to be very, very careful about that. And I guess the penultimate example would be Google, right? Google has just become a huge, huge force in K-12. And it's a data company. It's a search company. What's happening with all of that information that my children and your children and children around the world are putting into their schoolwork? And is it really totally secure? And how do we ensure that that remains the case, regardless of what else we plug in there or what other apps we install for kids on their mobile devices?
Yeah, I would agree with you, because even like a grown-up, it is a little bit tricky how you need to approach this privacy option, if you need to go incognito, or how do you need to search and where it's stored, and if you need to constantly clear the history, if you need to constantly clear the history, not only just on the PC, but also on Google, where it stores the history, in order to kind of trying to promote you some information or some products, whatever, like retargeting and so on. So you're totally right on that. That's yeah, but you told that you are actually helping in ad tech sector with a strategy, and can you give a little bit of insight where the education, publishing, and in general is going in the US, taking advantage of your base there, and how do you personally see the future of education in the US and like 5 years time?
Sure. I'll try and be succinct, and it's a very difficult topic to be succinct about. But over the last 15 to 20 years, much of the action has been in print to digital transformation. Print and textbooks, while they're denigrated today to some extent, were actually a very high-tech, very well-thought-out learning design, instructional design, subject matter expertise, you know, learning objectives based, accessible technology, but they had a couple constraints, one of which is they become immediately out of date as soon as you press print. And they aren't supple in the sense that you can't really get your hands on and manipulate the content in the ways that you can now. So for a lot of the publishers I worked with and for, the question was, how do we take this very rich, very mature technology that's currently delivered in print and move that into the digital medium in a way that will be better, faster, cheaper, that will deliver more measurable and more favorable learning outcomes, and create these repositories of learning objects, pieces of granular content that could be remixed, reused, and shared in all sorts of interesting ways. So that, you know, that work, a lot of that work has been accomplished in most of the major publishers. And now the question is, how have students changed in terms of how they're learning? How have institutions changed in how they're teaching? How has the whole world changed in terms of what kind of jobs are out there to be done, and what are we preparing kids for? Which used to be kind of an industrial age and is now post-industrial. So, and the rate of speed at which you need to evolve in terms of your product strategy is accelerating, not decelerating. So I think, you know, I spend a lot of time looking at how do companies win in markets that have a lot of competition, whether it's ELA or math in K-12. Or all of the principles, disciplines in a market like higher ed, you have to kind of combine all those elements of where is the market going. There's downward price pressure in higher ed. How can I deliver a richer experience for less money? And how can I update it in ways that will help individual students and institutions kind of see the progress they're getting from adopting those materials versus the traditional ones they've typically used? hope that answers some of your question anyway.
Oh yeah, it definitely does. Really appreciate, like, and maybe like the final thing I wanted to ask you about, would you yourself, working in the industry of education and delivering that strategy, would you yourself follow some resources or use, or maybe you can share some links where people can go and get some useful information?
I spend a lot of time kind of looking at early stage startups and new things that are happening in education all the time. There are lots of things that I think are very exciting that are just kind of coming onto the radar screen that your listeners should probably be aware of.
That's brilliant. So we will be sharing them underneath this podcast and in the blog post as well. I would like to thank you from all my heart, Conal, for your time and great information that you have shared with us. Thank you very much and have a fantastic day.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, Daria, and wish you well. Thank you.
Everything changes.